You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Minnesota Twins. And I'm joined by Rhett Bollinger down from Fort Myers, Florida. And Rhett, just kind of catching up on some of the early news and notes from down there in spring training camp. And Byung-ho Park has been a very early, I don't know, surprise is the right word, because you know he has power potential, but certainly a pleasant early storyline there for a guy who was designated for assignment and then outrighted to the minors, was not claimed by another club. So he's kind of in this weird, awkward spot with the Twins, but nice performance so far. He's gone deep a couple of times, and we have to see what the rest of the spring holds, but certainly an encouraging early sign for Park.
Yeah, it's definitely an encouraging sign for Park. You never know how he's going to handle that, you know, being designated for assignment right before spring training. You know, last year was tough on him, his first year, you know, coming over from Korea. Didn't go as planned. Still some of that power early, but, you know, had a hand injury, was optioned at AAA. Finished the year, you know, injured. And to get DFA, you never know mentally how he's going to take it, you know. It's tough on him. They just have to go through all that. And sure enough, he came in, and so far, he's had the right attitude, and surely it's, you know, it's definitely paid off in terms of his production. I mean, two home runs already in his first three games. He also hit the fence in right field in another one that actually some people in the Twins think was a home run as well. So it's been, yeah, it's been impressive. The big thing, too, is of the first home run was on a 93-mile-per-hour fastball, and the one that he hit today on Monday was on a 96-mile-per-hour fastball. So we know last year one of the things he kind of struggled with was velocity. And so to see him do well against high velocity like this and hit the ball, you know, with that kind of power is a good sign. Obviously, the difference is in spring training. It's so early. A lot of guys are throwing only fastballs. You're not really mixing in their full arsenal fully yet. So it's hard to really, you know, take too much from it. But the fact that he's catching up to fastballs thrown that hard and hitting the ball that hard, obviously, for home runs is a good sign. And we'll see he's definitely in the mix there for that DH job. Not being on the roster doesn't, you know, certainly doesn't help his case. I think Kenny Vargas being on the roster makes him a little bit more of a favorite. But so far, Park's been the most intriguing and best player in camp.
Well, let's talk about Vargas a little bit because, yeah, the DH spot is one of those – it's actually one of the few spots of roster intrigue with the Twins. You know, much of the position player group is settled. Vargas is a guy who a lot of us were kind of intrigued by at the end of 2014. I think we were calling him Little Poppy at that point as for the David Ortiz comparisons, but had a rough go of it the following season. And then, you know, last year maybe worked himself back on the radar a little bit in a short big league stint. So, yeah, what's his roster potential here?
Yeah, it's kind of the door's kind of open for him, more so than probably ever has been before. At least to open a season. He's definitely got a real chance here to be the everyday DH. It kind of depends on how he does this spring, and certainly Park is going to kind of play into that as well. But the chance is there for him. You know, he's a switch hitter with a lot of power. You look last year, he had some pretty solid numbers at the major league level, even if you look a little deeper at some of the StatCast numbers, see how hard he hit the ball. He's, you know, one of the league leaders, team leaders in terms of exit velocity. And all that, him and Park both had some encouraging underlying, you know, stats you could see from StatCast. And the big thing, too, with Vargas, as you can see, is that his launch angle, or really, you know, just more than anything, he's just driving the ball into the air a lot more last year. And that was on purpose, because the year before, for some reason, he kept driving the ball into the ground, and it wasn't really making use of his power. And once he changed that launch angle, it goes how strong he is, he was able to hit the ball into the air for home runs. And so I think this offseason has been more of an emphasis as well. He's even worked with Manny Ramirez a little bit in the Dominican in terms of, you know, kind of working on balance and getting that, you know, swing plane to lift the ball into the air and take advantage of the fact that he's such a big, strong guy. Because, you know, even a guy like Ortiz, you might see him finish that uppercut as a big lefty and drive the ball into the air. And I think that Vargas is big enough and strong enough to do that as well. And I think more and more teams and more people are starting to look at StatCast and look at exit velocity and look at launch angle and try to create the perfect recipe for hitting home runs and that kind of thing. And I think a guy as big and strong as Vargas and can hit the ball as hard as him, he can take advantage of that. And I think the fact that he kind of did that last year was a good sign. And I do think that he has some serious power potential, and just as does Park.
Another guy looking to bounce back, a young guy looking to bounce back after a rough go of things at a formative stage of his career is Jose Barrios. Had, you know, strung up the, what, ERA north of 8 and 14 starts last season. Another guy we were high on going into last season. What do you think his chances are for that fifth starter job, and what did he learn about himself from that rough year in 2016?
The thing about Barrios is we know the stuff is good. We saw it with our own eyes. The guy's got great stuff. He throws hard. He's got a great breaking ball. The changeup certainly has good movement as well. But last year he was hit hard. As you said, his ERA was above 8. You know, his fastball command was a major issue. Falling behind hitters, and then The changeup was crushed by hitters, and I think there's a little bit of a worry that maybe he was tipping pitches a little bit. I think the big thing was when he kind of, as part of his windup, he kind of like has his arm kind of go behind his back a little bit. And I think what happened was, too, you could see, the hitters could see if his pinky was up off the ball, then it was going to be, you know, a changeup, and it was, or sorry, it was off the ball, I think it was going to be a two-seamer, it was on it, the changeup. So hitters could kind of tell what he's going to throw in his hands, I think. So I think they've kind of worked to change his delivery a little bit of his arm path to get better consistent results. And I think that, you know, he had his first appearance in the Grapefruit League on Sunday, threw two innings, did give up a run, but looked a lot sharper. So like I said, the stuff's definitely there. It's just a matter of kind of harnessing it. So I think the thing he's kind of learned is just to kind of, you know, just how important, you know, fastball command is. And I think this spring, one of the big drills they've been doing is, you know, every time they throw bullpens, they got to throw 3 out of 5 strikes each side of the plate on fastballs there. So I think kind of just working that in and kind of harnessing what he has is going to be key for him. And he's got a chance to make the, you know, rotation. I think Trevor May is probably his top competition for that fifth spot. You know, Tyler Duffy's in that mix, Ryan Vogelsong. There's a lot of names you can throw in that spot. But I do think that the two top candidates are probably Berríos and May. And Berríos is going to pitch in the, you know, WBC for Puerto Rico. So he's got a chance to make an impact there as well. And if he pitches well on a big stage, that also could help his cause as well.
We know Phil Hughes is in the rotation, assuming health, and he's coming back from that thoracic outlet syndrome surgery and has the rib to show for it, kept the rib from that procedure. Give me the outlook for Hughes here in the early days of camp.
It's good right now. It really is. You know, talking to him, the nice thing is about surgery is thoracic outlet syndrome. Is it, you know, didn't really, you know, it wasn't like he had elbow surgery or shoulder surgery. Obviously, he lost his rib, which is a weird thing. But really, it, you know, his arm and everything, he said it's still totally normal. If anything, obviously, it feels better than it did because, you know, when you have that injury, you kind of lose feeling for your hands, that kind of stuff. You get numbness. It feels like you almost have a dead arm every day you throw. So I think to have him feeling good and healthy is a good sign. And he's also coming off a knee injury, too. I think his last game he pitched before his Grapefruit League debut was a game in which he got hit on the knee by a line drive and fractured the knee, you know, bone above his knee. So he went through a lot last year, but the good news is he's fully healthy now. He's in good shape. Everything else, his stuff looked good against the Red Sox in his debut. So you definitely can pretty much pencil him in the rotation barring some sort of setback. But at this point, like he was saying, he was pretty much cleared at the end of last season. He was throwing, you know, he was playing catch. He wasn't off a mound, but he at least finished last year healthy to a degree. And so he had a pretty normal offseason. So I think they're not too worried about Hughes. I think they're more worried about, you know, Perkins and his coming back from his surgery than Hughes at this point.
Hey, Rhett, one real sad note from the early days of camp. Minnesota journalist Rod Simons passed away at spring training camp. I just wonder if you had any thoughts on Rod. I'm sure you got to know him a little bit in your time there, but boy, what a difficult thing to have happen, you know, during spring training.
Yeah, it really was. It was very sad. Rod was an incredible guy. One of the people, you know, that was always positive and happy. You know, it seems like people are always energetic and always happy to be there, and you could really see it, you know. He came down to spring training, and we all saw him, you know, that Saturday, and he was out there doing interviews with Paul Molitor and everything because he's kind of a fixture locally on the radio. He's a former local ABC sports anchor. He used to be for, I believe, 5 years in the Twin Cities market and been doing a lot of radio stuff over the years. And just the joy he always had on his face. You know, even the last photo they had of him was him taking a big selfie with Paul Molitor and everybody and just having a great time. You could tell he's one of the people that really loved what he did. Which is refreshing to see, you know, and so to have him come down here, pass away in his sleep at 56 years old, and then have a wife and a kid back at home, an 11-year-old, is really, really tough. And so it's definitely was a sad, sad day, you know, in Twins camp. And, yeah, the Twins are trying to do what they can to support that family because it's definitely really sad news from a guy that was such a great person and a big part of this, you know, reporting community and the Twins community as well.
Yeah, all of us in the baseball community send our best to the Simons family. That's just awful. On a lighter note, Rhett, wanted to ask you, as a guy who's done his share of traveling on the baseball beat over the years, covering the Twins, do you have any favorite stories from life on the road? We're collecting favorite stories from our reporters this week.
That's a great question. I think for me, it had to be one of my first road trips. So I was hired to cover the Twins in 2011. This is my seventh season now, but when I was hired in 2011, I was based out of Los Angeles, where I'm from, and so I got the job during spring training, so it was kind of a crazy time to get the job. So I came to spring training, went on my first road trip to New York and Toronto, or Toronto and New York that year, and then came back to Minnesota for the first time ever. First time I've ever been to Minnesota was, you know, for opening a home opener at Target Field. And then I had covered that, and I had pretty much 10 days from there to kind of figure out where to live in Minneapolis. It was kind of a crazy time. Had everything kind of, I got it all figured out, had my stuff shipped. And sure enough, the day before the road trip, I was supposed to get there so I could unpack everything. Sure enough, the truck was a day late, and so I left for that road trip with all my stuff, not even there in Minnesota yet. And that first day on the road was in Chicago, and I'm kind of already scrambling because of all the, you know, craziness of the new job, and my stuff wasn't in my place yet and all that. So I get to Chicago, and it's Francisco Liriano's pitching against the White Sox. You know, and right around maybe the fourth inning or so, or fifth inning, I'm like, okay, you know, Frankie's typical Liriano. He's kind of all over the place. But you look up at the scoreboard, a couple of his riders are like, he still hasn't given up a hit yet. So he kind of laughed it off because he'd already probably thrown like 70 pitches by then. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, he just starts mowing down hitters. And we're like, okay, well, he's got a real chance here. What's going on here? And sure enough, Liriano finished that no-hitter, which was, you know, fun to watch. And it was one of the more unlikely ones. I think he walked like seven guys that day as well. So just one of those games you wouldn't forget. And also just the backdrop of it all, being my first, like, official road trip from Minnesota to a new city. And just the fact that, you know, all the craziness of my life at the time with stuff shipped to my place and covering my first no-hitter right away. It was definitely something I'll never forget, and it was an awesome experience. But at the time, was certainly a very nerve-wracking day, and that season too was fun to cover. You know, Jim Tomei's 600th home run in Detroit is a moment I'll never forget, and being able to share that and see it with how excited he was with his family to be there as part of that as well. So that's, you know, that's always kind of fun to look back at some of these historic kind of moments you see, whether it's a no-hitter or a big thing like Jim Tomei reaching a milestone like that, are always kind of the cool moments, at least in terms of the game, and sometimes the craziness of being on the road too also intersects with you know, your travel life and just your life at home and trying to adjust. So it's definitely kind of crazy.
It's never normal. If it's normal, you're doing something wrong, you know.
Exactly. Yeah,
and it always comes at you in waves, those experiences. So that's a good one, Rhett. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for your time, and thanks everybody for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Minnesota Twins edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.